Hey, what's going on? It's Pat Steinberg, and welcome to episode 3 of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles, and we have got a great one for you coming up. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com, and hopefully all is well, and we're looking forward to presenting this chat this week with Lanny McDonald. He is the guest of honor, and it's not just Lanny. Let me take you a little bit behind the scenes in terms of what you're going to hear. The first two episodes of this program were all focused on Mike Vernon. Well, the same day, our hosts Brent Cron and Colin Patterson also taped with Lanny McDonald. But on that day, Mike Vernon didn't want to leave. So you're getting Lanny telling some stories. You're getting Mike Vernon still there, plus Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. It's awesome. You're going to love it. About 50 minutes of just great, outstanding stories. Stay tuned. It's coming up in just seconds. But first, it is time for this week's edition of This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda. And we're going back to April 1st of 2011, because just over 14 years ago on that April 1st, 2011, pretty big day in Flames history.
Kept in by Nikitin. His shot from the line is blocked at close range by Aginla. Aginla's got a breakaway. He moves to the net with a wrist shot. He scores! 1,000 points for Aginla. A 3-2 Flames lead. Yeah, baby!
As called by the iconic Peter Marr, one Hall of Famer calling .1000 of another Hall of Famer. Yeah, on April 1st, 2011, Jerome Aginla became the 77th player in NHL history and first in Flames franchise history to record 1,000 points as the Flames beat St. Louis 3-2. Aginla recorded point number 999 with an assist on a game-tying goal in the third period. Then at 14:57, he blasted home the game-winning goal for point number 1,000. Aginla would finish his time in Calgary with a franchise record 1,095 points, and he would retire a few years later with 1,300 points overall. April 1st, 2011, point 1,000 for Jerome Aginla. That is This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda, your dealership for life in the Northwest Auto Mall. Hey, let's get into the conversation. As I said, it's not just Lanny. Lanny's the guest of honor, but you'll also hear from our host, Brent Cron, our co-host Colin Patterson, and hanging around for the conversation, oh, just another Hall of Famer in Mike Vernon. This is awesome stuff. We're covering Lanny's time in Hanna, Southern Alberta, his junior career, and a whole lot more. Let's listen in as Lanny McDonald sitting down with the boys this week on the program.
We were just going through your career a little bit. He was talking about the game you must have played in Lethbridge where the rink burned down while you were playing.
That actually happened. John Davidson was our goalie.
Yeah.
John is looking at the play, and we're about to face off, and John goes racing right past us to the bench. The building's on fire. The building's on fire. And
what period were you in? Like, what period was this?
This is the third period.
Yeah.
35 seconds into the third
period. Were you winning?
We were actually winning against the Edmonton Maple Leafs. In junior hockey, they suspend the game, obviously. The coach, John Chapman, tells us, go to the dressing room, because now what had happened, you know, the old planks they had for seats?
Yeah.
Well, a cigarette, you could smoke at that time.
In the rink, right?
In the rink. A cigarette goes down in between.
Yeah.
And it starts a fire down in the supply room.
Oh.
And the flames are coming through the seats. People are scrambling. 2,500 people in an 1,800-seat arena. It was the playoffs. And they announce, like, don't stop. Just keep going. Like, make sure you get yourself out of the building. John Chapman told us, go in the dressing room. Don't take off your skates. Grab your stuff. Go right out the back door of the dressing room in your skates. We walked out. By the time we got where we could turn around and see the building, the flames are coming through the top of the building.
That fast.
20 minutes later, the building was flat to the ground and no one was hurt. Like, it was crazy. I just did an event down in Lethbridge for the Heart Society.
Yeah.
And there were four people there. I always ask when I'm speaking, anybody happen to be here when the building burnt down? Yeah. Four people put up their hand.
Four people older than you.
Well, kind of. Which is remarkable.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a little side story to that. My dad and my brother were at the game. My dad going out because they had all the trophies in the front area, like trophy case.
Yeah.
All the memorabilia that you'd want to save. Yeah. And my dad told people that he was with, break the glass, because they were all locked, break the glass and take as many trophies as you can out. And that's the only way they saved all those trophies.
Oh, wow, that's a great story.
And then you took all the plaques off and put your team and your
name on.
Yeah, all of them.
Lanny was MVP.
MVP of 1972, Pee Wee Bantam and Midget.
Yeah, exactly. He moved up real fast. Yeah.
You guys are not fair. Wow. Yeah.
Did you have a mustache back then too, or no?
No, mustache didn't start till after year one in Toronto.
Yeah.
And I grew a beard and a mustache the whole summer after year one. Knew going back to Toronto, couldn't have a beard. You could have a mustache.
Because that was like the team rule, right?
That was the team rule.
Yeah.
So I shaved everything off, kept the Fu Manchu for 2 days.
Oh, yeah. And I remember. I saw pictures of that. Yeah.
Ardell said,
"No,
that is the sickest thing ever."
I love it.
Yeah. And so I shaved it up and started turning it out. Never shaved it off since.
So how long have you had it then?
Well, whatever that makes, 50 years now?
Gee whiz.
50 years. Wow. Oh, my God.
50 years.
That's no wonder it turned white.
Oh, man. You know,
you are so bad, Heater. I know why did not exactly say that. What he said right now.
I know.
And all of a sudden, it's on me now.
Yeah, exactly. Not another word. You troublemaker or patter.
You cannot trust that man.
No, you can't. No. You certainly can't. You know, it's funny. Going through, you know, HockeyDB is a marvelous tool, right? You can go through everything. And I'm reading your bio, and everybody knows who Lanny McDonald is. Like, you know, you go through, you play with a million unbelievable players. You're an unbelievable player yourself. But as I was going through, I'm looking at the coaches, and every coach has got a nickname. You got Red Kelly. You got Punch Imlach. You got Chopper McNeil. You got, you played for Don Cherry for a season too, right?
I did. Grapes.
Like, let's start with the first one there, Red Kelly. What was he like?
He was unbelievable. The guy never swore, and I mean that sincerely. Everything was holy smolarinos, son of a sea cook and bottle washer. You guys are playing like crap.
Yeah.
But he would never swear.
Yeah.
And he just kind of went by that rule. And if you look back at his career, I think he was an all-star at every position other than net.
Yeah.
And the guy was just the nicest man you could possibly imagine. Our daughter, I got to back up here. Red was married to Andra Kelly, and she was a figure skater.
Yeah.
Her and Ardell taught figure skating to the blind the first few years in Toronto, and that's where our oldest daughter got her name, Andra.
Wow.
From Andra Kelly.
Are you kidding me?
No. And the Kellys, when I didn't live that far from them, and they would invite me over for dinners, and I didn't know you weren't supposed to go to the coach's place for dinner.
Really brown nosing, eh?
Well, it explains a lot.
I had no idea. I had no idea, guys. Whoa.
Well, it wasn't the same back then.
That settler's a bum.
I hate him.
Can you get me a better settler?
Exactly, right?
Just get me better people to play with. They were the nicest people and really made me feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And Red and Jim Gregory really took me under their wing when I first got there. And Jim Gregory, even after year two, I wasn't really, I was trying to come into my own, but it wasn't quite getting there.
Yeah.
And Jim Gregory called me in at the end of the season, and he said, look, I know the press is on you. We're not trading you unless you come to us and tell us you can't take it anymore. We have no intention of trading you. There's all kinds of rumors you're going to Atlanta to team back up with Tommy Lysiak. And he said, I'm not trading you.
Yeah.
So get that out of your system. Come back next year and be ready to go.
Wow.
And, like, how cool is that to have a conversation with the GM?
Yeah, and to believe him.
You know
what I mean?
Harold Ballard had other ideas, I guess.
I was good.
Were
you
at the GM's place for dinner, Mike?
No, I never made it to the GM's place for dinner.
So what was it like for an Alberta boy playing for the Leafs? Like going out?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Growing up, my dad and I listened to Foster Hewitt on the radio. We only could watch two shows a week on the old TV, and one of the four kids had to stand and move the rabbit ears.
The foil on it.
And the only two shows we didn't watch, because Dad and I could listen to the radio, so we didn't watch Hockey Night in Canada. Mom got to watch the Ed Sullivan show, and Dad got to watch Bonanza.
Both great shows.
Unbelievable. I'd choose those all day long, yeah.
And they both thought, well, when we got the TV, which was black and white, it was going to run out of power real soon. So we only watched two shows a week. That was it.
To conserve energy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Who was your favorite team growing up?
Oh, Toronto Maple Leafs.
Really?
Yeah. Both my dad and I, even my brother, he was kind of split between Boston, Montreal, Toronto. But
that's half the league, by the way. A bandwagon or lane was. Yeah.
Can you believe that? And so for me to get drafted by Toronto, Dad just thought that was the greatest thing could have ever happened. And it was so much fun getting to go there. My first initiation with the Toronto Maple Leafs was at the draft. We had gone to the Memorial Cup in Montreal. I had met Jean Béliveau for the first time. I was like, I don't think I got any words out. It was and he was asking me, you know, I've seen you play. You look like you're a pretty darn good player. Good luck in the draft.
Yeah.
And then we sadly ended up losing, even though we beat the Memorial Cup champs in the Toronto Marlies.
Yep.
We ended up losing to Quebec and lost on a count back on goals for and assists, because at that time there was only three teams.
Yeah.
And then Quebec plays Toronto in the final and loses 10-0. Like, are you kidding me? And then went to the draft in Montreal.
You went to the draft?
I was going to say, we asked Bernie about the draft and what his was like. I was going to comment to you and say, what was your draft like?
Well, we were standing on the side.
What bar did they do it in?
What the heck was the name?
Shaperie.
Great place.
Come on. Great
steak.
Sorry, my bad.
I can't think. It was an old kind of hotel. We're standing on the side, and I think there was only maybe six guys. Denny Potvin was there. I don't think Vervegaard was there. Tommy Lysiak, who went second, was there. And I think Andre Savard, who was played for Quebec Aces, and they were the ones that lost to the Toronto Marlies.
Yeah.
And that was about it. Bob Daly might have been there as well. So King Clancy, when my name got called, and I thought I was probably going to Vancouver.
Yeah.
And that's where Vervegaard went, and I was so happy. Not that I didn't like Vancouver, but I wanted to play for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And then King Clancy came over, took me to the Toronto table, and I got introduced to everyone at the table. It was the coolest thing in the world.
Oh, man.
So I go right out after, and I call collect home to mom and dad.
I call collect. Will you accept the call?
No, he's
paying for this one himself.
No.
Are you in jail, Lanny? Where are you?
It was pretty cool. And dad.
So that was just a draft for the first rounders only or something?
I think it was like, at that time, I think they only went maybe 4 or 5 rounds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And when you think, because they only had 6 teams.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
That's kind of aging myself, but yeah, pretty cool.
Well, you only went there because you were there, like in Montreal.
No, I wouldn't have been at the draft otherwise.
Oh, okay,
we just stayed a day extra, and then the draft was 2 days after the Memorial Cup was over.
Well, that was cool.
Did you remember any of those conversations you had when you got to that table? Because, like, my draft, everything's a blur. I remember drinking a bunch of beer afterward with my buddies from Manitoba. That's really about
it. Why is that a shocker?
Well, it's surprising.
Blown away over
quite
here.
Quite interested in the story.
But do you remember any of those conversations you had with management or scouting staff when you got to that Leafs table?
I think, first of all, there was Jim Gregory. There was Johnny McClellan.
Yeah.
And Johnny McClellan said, like, listen, kid, like, this summer you better get in shape, get ready to go, and, like, you've got to be ready because at that time the World Hockey Association was coming in, and it wasn't official, but they were going to end up losing probably 5 or 6 guys. And the 4 guys that got drafted that year, Inge Hammerstrom, Boreas Salming, Bob Neely, Ian Turnbull, and myself all made the team because Harold didn't believe the World Hockey Association was a threat. And they lost guys like Rick Lee, Selwood. There was a ton of guys. And sadly, or great for us, we actually ended up making the team.
Holy smokes. You talk about, you know, getting yourself in shape. And we were busting Vernie's chops before about training camp for the Flames and going to Detroit. And they said, oh, you're a veteran. You can go smoke a couple heaters outside and have a couple beers and that's it. When did you start having to, what was training camp like? What was, there no fitness testing then, eh? Or no?
There was nothing like that back then. And the cool part was you thought you were in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
And then you got into camp with the old boys, and for the first week you're just flying around. You're feeling pretty good, and those guys aren't that good. Like you're going around them or skating past them, and then that first week goes by or 10 days, and all of a sudden the old boys are starting to get into shape, and now you meet about the 2 week point, and now they are better than you.
Yeah.
And it's like, holy shit, this is going to be a whole lot harder than I thought it was. And then reality set in, especially that first year. I got knocked off my feet so often.
Yeah.
And interesting story there when I talk about feet. I go back to my trainer, Lou Klesinski from the Medicine Hat Tigers. And I said, Lou, I'm getting knocked down all the time. And he says, well, let me look at your skates. So he looks at him and he said, there's way too much rocker in your skates. You're a river skater. He said, tell the trainers, don't put any rocker in your skates so you can go straight ahead. He said, you can't dipsy doodle. Like, you're not that kind of guy.
Yeah.
And he said, you're either going to go through people or be fast enough to go around, and if you have rocker on your skates, you can't get it done.
That's awesome.
That was a game changer.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's a great lesson for kids. You know, if you're a river skater, straight, you know, keep more blade on the ice. If you're a dipsy doodler, get the rocker.
Yeah.
Well, Hawk and Loop, what was he like? Railroading.
He was in between.
Oh, you can't skate. He is. Well, put anybody on the line, I'll race him right now. Yeah. And Hawk and Lube was the fastest guy on the team. And he had this wide stance. It would just go like this. It was unreal.
Oh, he got it done.
Oh, it was unreal.
Great helmet, yeah, too.
And then he looks at Pierre Pache and says, there, next, shut up. Yeah. Never heard another word from Pee-wee.
Hey, you have a big curve on your stick? Were you a straight player, or what did you have when you were playing, Lanny?
No, I had a very casual curl, yeah, or curl, yeah, curve when I was first in Toronto. And then when I kept perfecting the pull it in, yeah, and snap it,
yeah,
I started to get a little more hook at the end.
Yeah.
I got caught probably three times in my career, and I remember distinctly in Vancouver having too much curve on my stick.
Back when it was legal, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
When there was a actual rule.
Yeah.
And so I always had two sticks on the bench,
yeah,
at least two. And I see the ref, I see Vancouver, I think it was Stan Schmeel, go over and talk to the ref.
Yeah.
And he's pointing, and I'm sitting on the bench, and the ref starts coming towards me. I know he's calling my stick.
Yeah.
So I jam the stick in, break it.
Yeah.
And he couldn't measure it, but he gave me a 10-minute misconduct. It was worse than a 2-minute penalty.
Yeah. What, did Harold make you pay for the stick, too? Yeah,
yeah. No, that was in Calgary.
Oh, that was in Calgary.
That was in Calgary, yeah.
That's so good.
Oh, my God.
You, being a rookie, your first year at Leafs, we were talking about rookie parties earlier, too, what you had to pay for, everything like that. You guys have to do any of that stuff, too, probably, hey?
No, because what happened, one of the first guys at a rookie party was after a skate in Vancouver again, Ian Turnbull, who was strong as a bull. That was his nickname, Bull.
Good.
all the vets were going to grab him, and he had just taken his skates off, and he fought five or six of them, and they didn't have skates off. He got cut twice across the toes, and Red Kelly ended it right there.
Yeah.
There is no rookie initiation. This is over,
yeah,
regardless.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how we lived the rest of the time in Toronto.
But you didn't have like a dinner, go out for dinner?
Oh, God,
or no. Or anything like that?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was, well, after that happened, you can imagine if all of a sudden now you got in trouble at a rookie dinner or party, you were not going to play for a long time because Red and Jim Gregory laid down the law right there.
Oh, that's crazy.
No Christmas party?
Oh, we had one of the best Christmas? Worst parties. It was actually at a Halloween party, and it was in the hot stove lounge of Old Maple Leaf Gardens. And Nick, the old guy that was the manager there, he just gave us like open season.
Yeah.
And sadly, there was five of us at the end of the party: Boreas Alming, Ian Turnbull, Daryl Sittler. I'm missing one guy. Wasn't Tiger, I think it was Errol Thompson and myself got into tequila shots. And 84 glasses into the fireplace later, we got called down, back down the very next day to Jim Gregory. And Jim wanted to know who was going to pay for it. And did anyone drive home that night? No, all our wives drove home. Okay, you're fine. And that was it. So we had to pay for 84 glass shot glasses that might have seen better day.
Bill was $24.
Yeah, exactly. Had to take out a loan. Didn't get it covered. You played at Davy Keon, didn't you?
I did.
How was that?
That was my very first center iceman when, yeah, I got to Toronto.
Yeah.
And Davey was my first roommate as well. I might not have seen eye to eye with Davey on everything, being a rookie and him, yeah, being a veteran. And we've mended a whole lot of fences since,
yeah,
then.
Yeah.
And so I asked Jim Gregory about a possible change, and I ended up the next 2 years rooming with Inge Hammerstrom, and he was one of my best men at my wedding.
No way.
Yeah.
Good change.
You know what? It was fabulous. And Davey, in his defense, Harold, he had wanted to go to the World Hockey Association, wasn't allowed to go. There was some, not rule, but technicality in it.
Yeah.
And so he was bitter at that, and all these rookies making lots of money at that time when they hadn't proved themselves or anything yeah. else. Then eventually he went to the World Hockey Association 2 years later, and then we've had him back for numerous events at the Hockey Hall of Fame, and he still had problems with the Toronto management, but we kept encouraging him, including Daryl, look, all those people are dead and gone.
Yeah.
Like, it's yeah. over. Yeah. Please come back yeah. because they want to honor you. And he has. He's been back to numerous events, like I said, at the Hockey Hall of Fame. He's been back at the Captain's Row
yeah.
and different events with the Toronto Maple Leaf alumni, and it's fabulous.
Yeah. Oh, man.
He's in good shape, too. Like, he looks good.
Oh, he looks great.
He's got the bow tie on and everything all the time.
Yeah. It's three-piece suit.
Oh, no, he was good at the Hall of Fame when we were there and talking to everybody. Like, I was shocked.
I
was shocked because I heard stories, but,
yeah,
he was a little, I think, tough, like Lanny was explaining, because of the
yeah.
that and maybe a little bitterness in that.
Yeah.
But he was very accommodating and very friendly and things like that. So
I think once he got back and realized that people adored him and loved what he stood for, being a Maple Leaf, that he came back and all of a sudden had fun with people,
yeah.
which was fabulous. And it was a way to honor him, unlike the past.
Yeah. And I think the organization helps him out, and they do a lot of stuff with him now and things like that throughout the community,
yeah.
and he's well-liked. And
which
he's
is
got
the
probably
way
some great stories.
Oh, I would say.
And
oh
probably some stories about Harold Ballard that everybody yeah. wants to probably hear.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so there is part one of our chat. The guest of honor this week is Lanny McDonald. We'll hear more from him later on this week. Also, part two coming up of this conversation as well. Thanks for hanging out with us. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. And before we get back to the conversation, it is time for this week's edition of Flames Trivia. It's brought to you by OSY Rentals. Make the best use of your oil field production budget. OSY's Vapor Tight package comes with everything required downstream of the wellhead. Call 1-855-OSY-TANK. And this week on Flames Trivia, of course, it's Lanny McDonald themed. And hey, Lanny was drafted fourth overall by the Toronto Maple Leafs at the 1973 NHL Amateur Draft. He was drafted out of Medicine Hat in then the WCHL. Now it's the Western Hockey League, but Lanny drafted from the Medicine Hat Tigers fourth overall in 1973. Your question: a teammate of Lanny's on the Medicine Hat Tigers went second overall in that same draft. So Lanny went fourth overall from the Medicine Hat Tigers. What Tigers teammate went second overall the same draft year? We'll give you about 5 seconds to think about it. And if you are an old-time Alberta hockey fan, you'll know this one. The answer, Tom Lysiak was drafted second overall at the 1973 NHL Draft. So Tom Lysiak was drafted by the Atlanta Flames at second overall. Two picks later, his teammate Lanny McDonald drafted by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Unfortunately, Tom Lysiak never played as a member of the Calgary Flames. Did play 445 games with the Flames organization, but all in Atlanta. America. And by the time Lanny got here in the early 1980s, Tom had been traded elsewhere and was no longer a part of the organization. But Tom Lysiak, drafted second overall at a Medicine Hat the same year Lanny was drafted, fourth overall. And that is this week's edition of Flames Trivia, brought to you by OSY Rentals. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks for hanging out with us. And this is episode 3 of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com and stay with us. Our conversation with Lanny continues next. All right, let's keep it going as it's episode 3 of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. My name is Pat Steinberg, and our conversation with Lanny McDonald is continuing in just minutes. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. And a lot still to get to with Lanny McDonald as he was sitting down with our host Brent Cron, our co-host Colin Patterson, and Mike Vernon hanging out for the conversation as well. It's great stuff. And before we get back to it, it's time for Where Are They Now This Week, brought to you by Pure Chem Services. And this week we're focusing in on Joe Mullen, who is one of the NHL's most prolific American-born goal scorers. In fact, to this day, still is. Undrafted out of Boston College, Joe signed with the St. Louis Blues in 1979 and played 16 stellar seasons in the NHL, won 3 Stanley Cups, one with the Flames in 1989, 2 more with Pittsburgh in 91-92, was the first American to score 500 goals and get to 1,000 points, a 2-time Lady Bing winner, was known for his skill, sportsmanship, and consistency, and was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in the year 2000. He remains one of the greatest American players in NHL history, and today, Joe Mullen has retired to Cape Cod, where he spends time playing golf and plays some hockey with the Boston Bruins alumni, also busy being a grandpa to 5 grandsons. That's Joe Mullen, and that's Where Are They Now, brought to you by Pure Chem Services, the expertise to realize higher production and lower costs. And without any further ado, let's get back to the conversation with Lanny McDonald. It is the Hall of Famer sitting down with another Hall of Famer, Mike Vernon, as the conversation continues right now.
Before we get started on this too, my old man was a diehard Leafs fan, right? And I remember listening to him go after Ballard all the time in my household when things would go this way and go that way. I knew Leafs history like it was nuts, so I don't want to get in the way of this. It's yours, Lanny.
So when I first fly to Toronto and to sign my first contract, so Jim Gregory meets me. We go downtown. We have our meeting. My agent at that time, Dick Sorkin, who eventually got sued by, I think, 200 clients.
Reputable guy?
No. Anyway, so we get there, and so we agree on a contract. And so I signed the contract, and I think, okay, now I'm going to fly back home. And Jim Gregory said, no, I need you to stay. And I said, what do you need me to stay for? And he said, well, I've got to take your contract to Millhaven, the jail, because Harold was in jail at that time. And he had to get an initial and signed off by Harold.
What was Harold doing in jail?
Well, because
few parking tickets, let's call it. Back in the day, Connor, they were a little tougher on people. Yeah.
At that time, him and I think it was Stafford Smythe. Yeah, it wasn't Conn. It was I believe it was Stafford Smythe. Got caught for tax evasion. And then Stafford went and died on Harold, and someone had to take the fall. So, no, that's true. And Harold had to go to jail.
Harold, it's your turn.
I'm tapping out here. Right,
tap
I'm done.
The shoulder.
Yeah.
I'll do it, Harold. I'll do it. I'll
I love that one.
So oh, I think he was in jail for probably the first 3 or 4 years. And all our contact was through Jim Gregory and King Clancy. I mean, it was like, talk about a gong show.
Oh, my God.
Like,
how did the NHL think of this? The owner in jail?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if you think about it, way back then, it was the old boys club.
Yeah.
And you only had six. I think it was St. Louis, Minnesota, Oakland Seals, Philly.
Was LA in there, too?
Vancouver?
LA. Nope, Vancouver and Buffalo came in at the same time.
Yeah.
Remember, that was Talon and Perreault.
Yeah.
Oh. Like, who was going to get the flip
That's
of
right.
the coin?
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I can't get over that. He's in jail. We'll have to get him. Got to wait a little bit here. What's the holdup? Well, he's in jail. We'll get to him when we can, when we're allowed to see him. That is
one of the coolest things happened. So I'm waiting around for the day. So I go over to Maple Leaf Gardens. I talk my way into Maple Leaf Gardens. And
I'll grab another one, please.
There's basically no one in the building.
Yeah.
And so I go up to the third level in between. At that time, it was gold, reds, greens, grays. And so I go to the greens, and I'm looking down, and the place is completely black, except there's light coming in from each exit. And all of a sudden, this guy appears beside me. His name was John Iaboni. He introduced himself as John Iaboni. I write for the Toronto Sun. And he said, I'd really like to do a story. And I said, I should never do this, but can you give me 10 minutes just to sit here in this darkened building? I just want to soak it all in. And he said, absolutely. So after that, we do the interview. We became best of friends. Hmm. I had complete trust in him and him and me. And we still talk these days. It's pretty cool.
That would have been a good picture, too. Yeah. Do you have a photo of that?
I don't.
Oh, with
just the black and white.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter. The light shining down on it.
Yeah.
And, like, from behind or whatever, that would have been a cool.
Oh, I can close my eyes and still picture
it. Yeah.
It was 3 years before Polaroid came out.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a sketch artist coming in to draw the picture. Yeah.
Hold on. Can you just wait there?
Hold that pose. Stay there for 45 minutes.
Patter, why are you like this?
No, I'm not. It's just... People have asked.
It just popped out.
Yeah.
Who was your favorite player growing up?
There was actually three.
Yeah.
Two were the...
I'm right here, Lanny. So just, I'm just saying.
We'll get to goals in a second.
Not to score against, but to play.
Fernie, you're way too young.
Yeah.
Even though you had a birthday.
Yeah.
So Toronto Maple Leafs, Dave Keon and Ronnie Ellis. Then... This guy in Detroit by the name of Gordie Howe, and that's why
that guy,
I ended up wearing number nine.
Oh, okay. Smokes.
Yeah. And one of the coolest things was Ronnie Ellis was number one right winger in Toronto at that time.
Yeah.
Wore number six.
Wore number six, Ace Bailey's old number, which became unretired at the request of the family to have Ronnie actually wear it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And Ronnie Ellis took me under his wing and he said, this is what you got to do. This is how you got to play if you're going to survive. And I kept saying, like, Ronnie, why are you doing this? He said, you remember this when I'm gone and there's younger people coming in because that's what you do.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, and one of the things he said, I know you can handle your own, but you've got to fight 6 or 8 times this first year.
And, this is great. And was that in one game or the season?
And I'm thinking, okay, he said no. He said, you're going to gain respect around the league, and you're going to get more room the longer it goes and the more people understand you'll go. So in game four, we go to Philadelphia. Okay, I got a fight. I haven't fought yet. So the puck comes around the boards. I know Schultz is on the ice, he's coming in to hit me. I leave the puck and run him. And, like, we both go down, jump up, and he just absolutely, his nickname was Hammer. He hammered me.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I think I got two in, and he got 22.
Yeah.
I go to the penalty box. I come back to the bench, and I'm sitting by Ronnie, and Ronnie said, "What were you thinking?" And I said, "You told me I got to fight six or eight times." He said, "Not that guy. You are the dumbest guy I know." And that was lesson number two or three on the list. Pick your spots.
Oh, man. Fight the toughest guy in the schoolyard. Hey, just straight to the top for you. Holy smokes. What was it like the first time you met Gordie Howe?
Okay. This is a fun story. I had not met Gordie until we actually played in a game. And it was the first or the last year he played, 51 years old. He comes back to the Hartford Whalers from the World Hockey Association. Oh, yeah. And that's his only year that he plays with his two sons in the NHL, Mark and Marty.
Yeah.
And everyone said, like, "Lenny, just be smart. Like, don't be running Gordie," because Mike Pelech had done it earlier in the year, and Gordie followed him to the bench, and as Mike hit him, and Mike heads right for our bench, and at the last second, Gordie drove him in the back of the head right into the open gate of the bench. Yeah. And so they reminded me about that.
Thank God we know what happened to Mike Pelech.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he got cut big time. Oh, sure. My God. And so I got reminded of that before the game in Hartford, and everything's going good. I'm leaving Gordie alone. Mark has the puck down in the corner. He's playing defense, and he comes around the back of the net, and I run Mark right into the boards.
Oh, no.
And
the next best how.
And he goes down in a heap, but he had passed the puck. Now I'm heading back to back check, because, you know, I always back check back then.
Yeah,
first. And
even in alumni games, I can see you.
Oh,
I can count on you.
And I can hear this swoosh, swoosh, swoosh. And I'm thinking, what the hell is that? And I turn sideways as Gordie elbows me right in the chops. And he said, "Don't ever do that again." And I think I said, "Okay, fine."
Did he swear? Did he swear, Lanny?
Oh, dang, Nabbit. I don't think he swore. He just told me, "Don't ever do that again." And we were at many charity events, and he said, and we would laugh about the story, because he would tell the story, and we'd laugh about the story, and he said, "You know, I have to give that kid a lot of credit. Like, he never, ever did that to my kids ever again."
He's a very good listener. Yeah.
A little slow learner, but I guess we have 6'10".
Oh, that's so good.
Oh, God, that's
Daryl Sittler, what was it like playing with him?
That guy, there's quite a story there, but that guy loved the game, loved being a Maple Leaf, should have never been anything but a Maple Leaf. And to play the way he did, he could pass the puck. He had a great shot. He was an unbelievable leader, and he could fight with the best of them. And he fought both Hextalls at different times. Gary Howitt, who was one of the tough guys with the Islanders, they went to it at Center Ice in Maple Leaf Gardens and ended up both guys on their knees throwing punches, and Daryl definitely won that fight. And I believe it had everything to do with us eventually beating the Islanders in the playoffs in Game 7 that year. The guy was remarkable how he represented the Maple Leafs, but how he led the boys on and off the ice.
Oh, I had no idea he was a...
I didn't know he was a fighter either.
Oh, he was good, yeah.
Oh, he was a great fighter. One, I'll tell you a cool story that happened in Detroit. We had an all-out brawl in Detroit, and we had them often. And at that time, like, it's pair up, whatever happens, happens. And Daryl was fighting with Dennis Hextall. And Tiger and I end up in the corner with Bugsy Watson, Brian Hextall, and Terry Harper. And we've got 3-on-2. And Daryl gets to the penalty box, and we're taking shots off the side of our heads, and we're trying to just hold our own between the two of us and three of them. And the period ends. We go to the dressing room, and at the end of the second period, and Daryl is livid. Yeah. And he goes around the room and asks every guy in the dressing room, who did you have? Who did you have? Who did you have? Because he knew that Tiger and I got outmanned 3-2, but he couldn't figure out in the penalty box what the hell happened there. And he gets to Rod Seeling, and Rod Seeling said, I had Eddie Jochman, the goalie.
Who was an unbelievably tough guy in his day.
Little known fact.
But he was on the bench.
And Wayne Thomas said, no, I had Eddie Jochman. You were just holding on while I had Eddie Jochman. And Daryl, in between periods, jumped him in the dressing room, Rod Seeling in the dressing room, and we had to pull him off in the dressing room before we went out for the third period. And less than a week later, Rod Seeling got traded to Buffalo because... I believe Daryl possibly walked into management and said, we cannot win this way. It's everyone in or no one in.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
And there it was.
Culture.
Old-time hockey, baby. Yeah.
Old-time hockey.
Eddie Shore.
Were you with Daryl when he scored 10 points in the one game or 9 points? Whatever.
Lanny was minus 3 that day.
Yeah, they lost 11.
Oh, there's a good story there.
Oh, Lanny minus 8. Yeah.
Hey, he couldn't have got those 10 points without me.
Yeah.
I assist on the first goal.
Yeah.
And I scored the last goal. And no, I think it was actually the opposite way around. I scored the first and get assist on the last. If I didn't get both those, he wouldn't have got 10.
Absolutely.
But I got 4 points. I thought I was going to be first star. And I was really disappointed I didn't get second or third because they gave Daryl all three. And honest God, he deserved it. But there's a side story to that. We win the game 12-4. And 12-4 against the Boston Bruins.
Was it in Toronto?
In Toronto. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Don Cherry is the coach. And Jerry Cheevers had just come back from the World Hockey Association and didn't play. They didn't want him to play. And Dave Reese. Thank you very much, Patter. Way to pull
it. Yeah, I was like 4 years old. I watched a game. Jeff Reese. A lot.
Dad or something?
Yeah. Anyway, they didn't want, even when the game got out of hand, they didn't want to put Cheesy in because they were going to play the next night in Boston. That would be his first game. So anyway, Daryl ends up 6 goals, 4 assists. And it was hilarious on the bench because when Daryl jumped on the ice, like, people were looking back at Red Kelly, like, I want to go. And Errol Thompson and I are saying, no, he's on our line.
You can't have him.
We're going. Yeah. Well, the game is 12-4, and Boston scores 2 power play goals in that game. So you can only be a minus two.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, there's two guys, and this was before the Detroit incident, and two guys that were minus two. That means they were on for no goals for and two against. And it was Rod Sealing and Tiger Williams.
No, not Tiger.
Does he tell the story the same way, too? It wasn't his fault. Somebody, something happened.
He'll never listen to the radio show.
He's done.
He tells everyone, I can't believe Daryl and Lanny bring that story up because I put both of them in the Hall of Fame, and the least they could do is try and help me get in.
That's so good.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man, that's so good.
It was quite a night.
Yeah.
And to have him score 10 goals and then Gretzky, Lemieux, Connor McDavid,
Crosby,
Nathan MacKinnon,
Patterson.
Yeah. None of those guys ever get to 10.
No,
it's remarkable when you think about it that record hasn't been broken and maybe never will.
Yeah,
Boreas Salming,
in my opinion, and not just because I'm involved in the Hockey Hall of Fame, I believe he was one of the top 5-6 defensemen of all time. And every European player should actually have paid him a fee for paving the way for them to all play. That guy took a beating, and we tried to our best to protect him, but he was unbelievable teammate. He could block shots. He might have been the best shot blocker I ever played with. He had an unbelievable pass. He would say, I will find you. And he'd come around behind the net. He'd float one up over six sticks and drop it flat on your stick, and away you'd go. And then he had a great shot as well. And he was so good on the power play. And he was fearless. And he took a beating like you wouldn't believe and never thought anything of it, like, I'll be back.
Yeah.
He reminded me a lot when Hawk and Lube came in. Yeah. That's exactly how Hawken played, and it was a carbon copy of Borea.
Like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like, he was one of the first European players to come over and play, correct?
He was.
And was he... It was, people were obviously coming at him too to see if he could do it, right? So he was, every night there was guys chasing him down trying to make him fight for everything he got, right?
They were, and one of the telling tales about Borea, in my opinion, was in 76 having the luxury and opportunity to play for Team Canada in the 76 Canada Cup, and Borea played for Sweden against us in Maple Leaf Gardens. And when they announced the teams, and I'm standing by Daryl on the blue line, they were kind enough to allow us with Bob Gainey to be the starting lineup. And we got great cheers. But when Borea's name was announced as the starting lineup on defense for Sweden, he got a standing ovation.
Wow.
And it told you how much the fans loved him and revered what he was doing on a daily and nightly basis. It was incredible.
You have any pranksters on that team? You guys screw around, have some fun with each other?
Jim McKinney, Howie, as they know him,
he was great.
Oh, my God. Might have been the biggest disturber, but you had guys like Tiger.
Yeah.
You had guys, and think about this, being a goaltender, the two of you. We had three guys as goaltenders, Doug Favell, Dunk Wilson, and E.J. Johnson. Eddie Johnson, as our three goalies.
Was he 100?
Oh, my God. And in practice, And Red Kelly would beg them, like, one of you guys go in the net. So
go down, dry.
One would go at each end, and they'd stand in front of one post with the stick and try and throw it out and maybe deflect the puck.
That's what Reggie used to do with the stick.
Yeah, they didn't want to get hit.
Well, you know, Ronnie Stern tells a funny story about you, Vernie, where you would stand right across the goal line. You didn't want to take any shots, and you'd leave the whole glove side open, wide open.
Leave everything.
Right? And Sterny thought you'd be screwing with him, so he tried to beat you blocker side. He kept hitting you in the shoulder and the neck all the time because he thought you were screwing around.
Sterny, you got all the room over here.
It's all over here. Yeah, it's all over here.
There it is. Help yourself.
He was outthinking you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah.
Well, let's talk about you shooting the puck in practice.
Yeah, low blocker, high glove. Low blocker, high glove.
You forgot five hole.
Oh, no. Yeah. It was Reggie Loveland. Lanny comes down. It's like, just keep your legs closed. Put the glove up here.
And what happened, Vern? What happened?
It worked. It was unreal.
And just like that, our episode is done. Part one of our chat with Lanny McDonald in the books. And there will be a part two because Lanny just starting to scratch the surface. As we start to wrap things up on the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles, thanks for hanging out with us. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks to Lanny. Thanks to Mike Vernon. And of course, thanks to our outstanding hosts. It's Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. And thanks to our great title sponsor. And of course, that is Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. You can find this program on the Flames Talk podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. And we will talk to you again for episode 4. Thanks for hanging out.